This interview with Melita James was recorded on February 14th, 2023, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
One of the first questions I wanted to know is, what was it like being a female correction officer?
Ooh, it was levels to it. It was definitely levels to it. So you do go through a vigorous training prior to entering corrections. But I must say that the theory does not usually match exactly when you're there. So initially when you come in, you're green and, you know, everything is overwhelming. You got to feel your way through. But there were very uncomfortable experiences that you have to kind of turn a blind eye to. Case in point, showers. In a male facility, in our facility, say for instance, if I worked a section or tier, a average tier would be about 200 guys, and they had to take showers. And the showers, a lot of times they were situated different ways. Sometimes they were right behind your desk, and sometimes they were on the tiers. But if they were on the tiers, you had to make certain that somebody would get out so that the next person could shower. But if they were on the behind your desk, a shower would probably have about 8 guys in it, 6. At a time, and it was uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable. I think the one thing that after 20 years of working in the correctional facility, the one thing when you carry yourself with a professionalism, with a respect for yourself and respect for your fellow human being. And a lot of times you did not get disrespected, but if you lowered who you were, disrespect came heavy. And I could say, I felt like males have something innately that they maybe respect their mothers, they respect their grandmothers. And so in turn, their sisters, their wives, their children's mother, the respect is there somewhere. So I piggybacked on you have women in your family, you have somebody, some woman in life that you have respected. And so I kind of demanded that same respect for myself. Yeah.
Go ahead, Mark. You get one more right now, and if we have time, we'll piggyback to you after everybody does their round robin. So you got another question for Ms. James?
I do have another question, yes. Can you go into detail about what the most challenging thing about being a corrections officer is, or was, I'm sorry?
Oh, there were many.
In your opinion.
Oh, the most challenging thing. In my opinion, being an African American woman, seeing that many African American men incarcerated, and understanding the complexity of the system that they are incarcerated in, that was probably one of the most challenging.
Go ahead, Mark. I have one more question.
Can you explain a little bit more about how that made you feel, seeing all those men incarcerated? What did that make you feel?
Some people just looked at it as a job. And at one time I looked at it as a job, but I have, throughout my life, I've been active in my community. I've seen broken homes. I've seen the African-American home broken. And what happens to children who are separated from their fathers. And so in our community, you know, it's common in the African American community, a little bit too common. And so, but again, when you see the complexities of, you know, because maybe I had an opportunity to go on transport to transport guys to the court systems when they were being tried, and sometimes you would see an African American male and a other, let's say white, get tried almost crimes that were very similar, but the African American man got a more stringent charge, and that was common. That was common.
Go ahead, Mark.
So this is my final question. It's a little bit off topic, but would you say while you were on duty that you would, I don't know the easiest way to say it, but maybe not make your position there as difficult for everybody else who was there?
Absolutely. I try not to make my position in the human race difficult. But again, this is, like I said, let's say the population in the system that I worked in was probably 95% African-American. And so, you know, I was a human being first. And so prior to me working in you know, the system, I understand the complexities of human beings. So, and one thing is, I'm no judge nor juror. I was not there for that. I was there to do a job, no more, no less. And so I don't try to make anybody's experience difficult. But oftentimes, I could say that I would try to make experiences less difficult. And I'm going to say that because, you know, I may, just being kind, just being non-judgmental, working, oftentimes I used to work in the library, and I would always make certain that, you know, guys, if they had a thirst for knowledge, that they would have access to those things. Again, just, you know, you got to be a good human being no matter where you work at. And so I've carried that throughout my life. And through that, I had to carry. You had to carry it within that place because there were so many levels to the environment. It was a very toxic environment, and so I can actually, off the top of my head, I prefer to use the term the light. And so I knew of everybody that tried to carry the light into that experience. And it makes a difference. It makes a difference in jail. It makes a difference in school. It makes a difference in home. And so, yeah, I made sure that I operated in the light in that experience.
Thank you, Mark. Ms. James, I'm just curious. The whole African-American sister versus the incarcerated brothers in jail, would it drive you to tears? Would it sometimes get to you where you just can't do anything but cry?
I wouldn't say cry. I mean, again, I'm used to it in the community. It was what word would I want to use? It just touched your heart. It just touched your heart. Especially, I can tell you now, like right now, I'm a tutor in a school, Rundle Elementary School in Cherry Hill. And mm-hmm. oftentimes, you know, after the pandemic, a lot of kids fell behind in school. And so we're there trying to catch kids up. But I can mm-hmm. tell you, of my caseload, three of my kids that I tutor came to school just humdrum, just like torn down. And I always ask them, like, how you doing today? And about three of them since school started said, I'm sad because my daddy's locked up, you know, and they can't focus. Can you imagine being 7 years old and then nobody actually, you know, mom has to pick up the pieces and she has to keep on doing what she has to do. And oftentimes the kids, they don't have anywhere to express these emotions and they come to tutoring and they express it to, I'm not even there for that, but I'm there for that. Because in tutoring, the one reason why oftentimes we see progression is because we see them. We take the time out with them. We acknowledge them. And so, I mean, today I had a 7-year-old, just like, I want to talk to my daddy. It's Valentine's Day. The whole school's and the whole, everybody is love, 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 love. And then you got a handful of kids that's just sad because they're like, I want to talk to my daddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, next volunteer for questions, please. What about you, Kaya? Did you come up with anything? Kaya.
Yeah.
Hello, Kaya.
I know you weren't near your notes, but come on, I know you can give Miss James. And Miss James, hey,
Kaya, can I
Melita. Melita. I was wondering, was it Melita?
Melita, yeah.
That I has that Latin E sound.
Yeah, absolutely. Most Latin people get it on point.
All right. Latin. Come on, Kaya. Come on. I know you've been thinking, dog. What do you have for Miss James?
Come on. Let me see your face, too, Kaya. Why can't I see your face?
You can see me.
There you go, Kaya, girl.
My question is, how difficult was it working with the event?
Oh, again, it was levels. I can tell you, Kaya, one experience that was kind of difficult for me was that I was working in the gym. And when you worked in the gym, you had to come in the door and then the office was kind of off to the side. And so day to day, coming in the gym, you know, walking past, you know, 200 guys, and you feel lustful eyes. You can feel lustful eyes. Or you can feel a silence that comes across when you're just walking by. And one day I did not feel like acting like it wasn't happening, because you learn how to put this shield on, but like this particular day, I didn't feel like wearing a shield. And I actually went through my supervisor and I said, like, I can't work in the gym today. And she was like, why? And she was an egotistical somebody, but that's a whole nother story. But so she was like, why? And I said, I just don't feel like being gawked at. I don't feel like feeling like I was a steak in the lion's den. And so after much, you know what you signed up for, blah, blah, blah. You know, I just wasn't, it was a no for me, but you know, they were convinced to like, keep your mask on and do the job. But I was just like, nah, not today. Not today. And so, but that was something that you have to do. You have to act like you don't, you know, guys aren't gawking at you. Sometimes, you know, guys will be masturbating. Just if you're doing lock time or something and you're going to lock all the cells, you know, they would just wait at that moment when you were going by. The very first time it happened to me, I was stunned. And I don't even think they prepared us for that. And I was stunned. I felt disrespected. I felt violated. And but I did at one time have a supervisor that says that, like, if it happens again, you pull your mace out and you spray that brother on because he violated you. But unfortunately, I wasn't able to do that. but yeah, so that was, You,
Kaya,
again, you.
Go ahead, Ms. James. My apologies.
No, go ahead, Kaya.
Kaya, did you want to just add something or ask another question that Ms. James was referring to? Because she just said something. I think you were with us on the pre-conference call before we brought Ms. James. And remember, we were talking with Mr. Greg Carpenter. He's in the car. And we talked about women, how do we put it? That some women come in as correctional officers looking for attention, looking for love. Okay. So I need one of the fellows, maybe if you feel like doing it, Edward, or if you want to do it, Kaya, to ask that question that we were talking about before Miss James came on the scene a couple of minutes ago. Do y'all remember that conversation we had? Come on, y'all.
Come on, y'all.
We were talking with Mr. Greg, and we were talking about women corrections officers. I need somebody to bring that question up to Miss James now. I just gave it to you. So all you got to do is reword it.
Yeah, reword it.
How do you feel about women and girls being an object of attention?
Speak up a little bit for me, doll. Speak up a little bit. I couldn't understand your question because we got to record this so we can hear it on tape. Go ahead.
Okay. How do you feel about women and girls being the object of attention in the prison?
It was very complicated. It made things very complicated. I personally was offended because it did make things complicated, because usually women that compromise themselves in that way, it was levels. First, they feel like they find the love of their life. Then before you know it, they're bringing in cigarettes. It always starts with cigarettes. And then cigarettes move to drugs, and then drugs can move to things upward to a gun. A couple of times we had a gun in the institution, and I could not understand. You know, I was considered a cop. What they call you, police, when you kind of go by the book, they call you police, and even in the inside. And so, it just always made things difficult because, you know, oftentimes we would be in lineup or something like that, and we would smell a stench of marijuana. Now, keep in mind, we were searched from head to toe before we even came into the institution. But there were women that would have drugs and other things in their cavities. And so, and again, when the inmates got said drugs or what have you, oftentimes because they are impaired, those same guys that I told you that possibly today they would respect you for who you were and how you courage yourself, because they were under the influence, they may not respect you when they're under the influence. And so officers who did come in there seeking attention, and it wasn't always women. It was a lot of men too. It was always a compromise. I can tell you this: I have since been retired, and I may have came across some officers who we used to call them dirties. That's what we call them, dirties. And when you encountered them after retirement, almost had to like. It was almost like you jeopardize my safety. You jeopardize everybody else's safety when you do compromising things like that. And so, it was complicated. And I just couldn't understand the fact that, like, these people had to get their lives together. I don't understand. I could not understand. Like, the risk to me wasn't worth the reward, because we had access to these guys' entire criminal histories. Not that you can't go in and, you know, this is the year that this is the year that God said that your life is totally turned around. But the recidivism rate, oftentimes with guys that were incarcerated, it was a turnstile. And so I just couldn't understand how a young woman and or a young man who maybe had the opportunity. Corrections actually paid a decent amount of money for people who had a limited education. And so you jeopardize being able to take care of your children, being able to have some upward mobility in a career that you don't necessarily need degrees in, for what? For what? So that now you're paying bails? So that now you have to go visit courts? But now, like, it was complicated. It was complicated. Yeah.
Ed, come on in, Ed, if you don't mind, please.
Hello. I'm Ed.
Hey, Ed.
So my question was kind of just like, what were interactions, like daily interactions, like as a woman, as a correctional officer, different from like a male correctional officer? Just like those daily interactions, how do they differ?
Again, I believe it was an energy thing, but I can tell you this. So doing random searches, like we always had to do random searches as the detainees walked throughout the facility, and you had to search. And so when you search, you had to go along the body, you had to go upwards to the genitals. And after 20 years of touching genitals, it was, again, it just becomes the job. But then after you leave, at the end of the night, you're just like, oh, I'm just tired of this. Also, you know, now correctional facilities, they have air conditioning. The facility that I worked in had no air conditioning. And not just seeing, you know, if I'm making a round and, you know, half the guys, like sometimes guys didn't sleep with anything on. And so it was, you know, just seeing, and oftentimes, you know, they would say that it's hot and you're like, put some clothes on. That got old. Another thing too was that I told Chrissy this too, being not only did we had to search inmates, but we as correctional employees, we had to be searched every day. And if we travel between different institutions, we also had to be searched wherever you went. You had to be searched if you entered a new jail. After I retired, I was so happy not for somebody to touch my physical person. They had to go up in your breast. They had to go everywhere, just as if they were searching the inmate. The officers had to be searched as well. And your physical person being touched every day. And it may have been done professionally, but today you may have a coworker that, you know, I don't know, had a bad bone out on you or something. And they're going to do it in a way that they want you to feel violated. So that was interesting too. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
What else you got, Ed?
What else you got, Ed?
yeah, so maybe how was your relationship with the other correctional officers? Did you guys... For them, I know sometimes there was like a little bit of like an ego issue, but how was your relationship with the rest?
I can say once I retired, it's like these, you know, just how high school is, like it's kind of these cliques, kind of. And so it was kind of like that too. I can tell you that most of the dirties stuck together. Where some had some kind of brotherhood, the people who did do their job, we all kind of gravitated towards each other. And I can honestly say that I built some great relationships. I mean, we had baseball teams, football teams. Oftentimes we would hang out and, you know, I went to baby showers and weddings and anniversaries. And so you can gain a brotherhood or a sisterhood with, and I had a great, I enjoyed my career with the officers that I would consider afterwards, my friends. But I can tell you that there was a lot of officers that were compromised in my career. Yeah.
Ed, did you want to add anything else?
This might be a kind of a broad question, but like, would you consider, like, looking back on your experience as a whole, would you see it as like a positive effect on your person, or more of like a negative, or like a source of trauma?
Ooh, that's a good question, Ed. I think one thing about working in the jail was that it was like Baltimore City squished together. So you know how Baltimore has the east side, the west side, south side, and then of course surrounding counties. And so it was a very interesting experience that it was all squished together. And for me, understanding people, I think I'd use all experiences as a lesson, but there were so many factors that you learn from. You learn from what man does when he is locked in a cell 22 hours a day, how that lack of freedom can change a person. I learned wait, repeat the question again. I'm sorry. I know it was kind of broad, but repeat it again.
Yeah. So I was just wondering, like, how did your experience as a correctional officer affect your person? So, like, did it maybe make you a better person, in a lack of better words, or did it, like, traumatize you, or maybe a little bit of both?
I'm thinking all of the above.
Yeah.
You know what? Melita, I'm wondering if Ed is asking, has it had some kind of effect like on you now? I mean, now, Ed, as no. opposed to being in there, does it have like side effects that, now that she's not there?
I love the question though, because again, being a woman working, having kind of this control, I'm going to put that in parentheses, over men, that it's a natural dynamic. Like, I don't know, and I can say, because at the time when I worked in corrections, I had a teenage son, young adult, and it made me harder on him. Because I did not want him ever to see, I never wanted to see him in that environment. It made me skeptical about people. I tell you, at the time when I worked at correction, I was married. Throughout the process, I wasn't married. But meeting people, meeting men, I always had access to find out if I met somebody because I could check them in the system. So that was always great. Give me a name. I was checking everything. Case search. I know about you before you know about you. And so, but I'm going to say all of the above. It makes you a little shell shocked. I can tell you most correctional officers, when you work in an institution, the one thing that you always want to know is where is the door? Because a riot can kick off. Any kind of dangers, a fight can kick off with weapons and stuff like that. And so in your personal life, going to restaurants or going to the movie theaters, most correctional officers try to get seats near the door or in restaurants near the door. And that's to me, that was a psychological trauma. To me, that was, because you're always, because you're trained, but then the environment trains you to always be in the yellow. And the yellow is anticipate that something is going to happen. And so, but when you go in your personal life, it starts out in restaurants and movies, but then it trickles out. It does. It has the opportunity to trickle down into your personal relationships. So I'm gonna say, I believe most people do have a bit of PTSD when they leave there. Yeah.
Thank you. That was great.
Yeah.
Hey, Greg, you still with us? Greg, you still there?
Yeah, Greg.
He was in his car. He might have disconnected from us.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I'm still here, Stan.
Oh, yeah, Greg. I wanted to introduce you to Greg. Y'all don't know each other, do you?
No.
Greg is one of our, he's one of our facilitators that helps us get these good people to speak with, like yourself. Oh, and yeah. Greg, right. I was wondering if you want to throw something in there for Ms. James, from your perspective.
As yeah, a former inmate. Would you like
to ask a question?
Would you like to ask a question?
What facility did you work in?
I worked at BCDC. Oh,
you was downtown, okay.
City.
And so you say
so everybody had to come to city before they went through anyway, where they went before they went to anyway.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. That was part of the process, no doubt. Yeah, because right. when I was there as a resident, you know, I was started out at 954 Forest Street, but that was long. Ooh. You know, yeah. That was back before in the 70s.
The original steel side.
Yeah. Well, that was back when the penitentiary was really the penitentiary, and the cut was really the cut. You know, it was like, you know, stuff was happening and it happened on a whole different level. You know?
And I think that when you, if you're talking back in the, what you talking back in the 80s or the 70s?
No, 70s actually. Well, 70s, yeah. I was in that about 20 years. So it was from the 70s and so to the 90s.
So when you went through the system, it wasn't a whole bunch of female correctional officers at that time, was it?
Well, actually, I was just sharing with Stan, you know, that me and my rap partner, we had filed a lawsuit to try to keep y'all out of there. Because, exactly. You know, we foresaw, you know, a lot of the harm and all of the different things that's taking place now and that has taken place, we saw it coming. Because it's like you talk about, you know, human beings and just the dynamics and just the makeup of human beings and our vulnerabilities and, you know, just who we are. You know, you're given an opportunity to be in an environment and eventually things change. And as things change, you become more vulnerable to the environment. Because I was seeing with Stan how, you know, guys, and you know firsthand, because like you say, that gawking and all that kind of stuff, guys practice all day long how they're going to ease up on you and try to take advantage of you. That's what all they do, day in, day out. Yep. So you got to always be on your best behavior, like you say, and you have to look at it for what it really is. But, you know, because we up and down in our emotions, you know, we get caught off guard sometimes. And it's just a matter of how well we recover from that. And, I mean, you can really speak to that firsthand because I'm certain as a female, you know, guys pissed up on you in all kind of ways. You know?
Oh, my gosh. I can't tell you in 20 years, I'm going to say 20,000 times. 20,000 times. It was, and I also seen women who they may have been, you know, a stand upish, and just like you said, it depends on the circumstances. And some of my coworkers who fell to that manipulation, you know, you usually didn't find out until they was in too deep. You usually didn't find out until they was in too deep, and. Yes. It was, and even during my time there, one thing that they did that we tried to fight against was that they lowered the age from 21 to 18. And when they lowered the age of a correctional officer from 21 to 18, and they had career criminals in, they was playing these kids like the flute, especially the young girls. They was playing them like a flute. And it went down rapidly. The professionalism, because, you know, same way I was telling them about just being safe, me being wanting to be safe as a correctional officer, inmates or detainees, they wanted to be safe too, because they realized that if an officer was compromised, you never knew what that meant for a fellow detainee or a fellow inmate. You never knew what that meant. And though the officers that was compromised, they jeopardized everybody's safety. And not just officers. It was more than just officers. It was dietary employees. It was laundry employees. It was mail employees. I mean, it was so many people that could have been compromised. And usually, I must say, usually for women, it was for love. And for the males, it was for money. Mm. It was for money, yep. Because you can make, you know, you guys don't know, but like, say for instance, I think a pack of cigarettes on the streets right now costs probably about $10, and if you're locked up, it's probably five times that much for one pack mm-hmm. of cigarettes, yep. And so people who, you know, I think the correctional officer yearly income probably is about $40,000, $45,000. But there were officers who had a second hustle that they were making double that. And that was through contraband. And they were making a lot of money. And a lot of that was the male officers. Mm. Yep.
Greg, thank you so much. That was some good insight. I'm going to tell y'all, this is the best class we've had so far, really. Because oh, wow. We had like 9 or 10 questions we talked about. And, you know, we just kind of, before we talked with you, discussed things that we could talk. And I'm going to be honest. We covered every base. I don't think anything was left unturned. So can that's why.
Can I ask something?
Go ahead.
Yes, Sabi, Sabi, you didn't even say anything.
Yeah, nice.
Go ahead.
Nice to see you. Yeah, I'm
you
like, I feel kind of sorry to immerse you in that your past life, because you know it's hard to remember. First of all, maybe you have a kind of not good memories of that you done there. Can you describe your like the worst day?
The worst day. Oh yes, yeah,
the worst day.
Let me tell you.
You have it.
The worst experience I saw was a guy had got stabbed in one of his arteries. He had got stabbed in his neck. And by the time, it's called bleeding out, but when all of the blood in your body comes out of your body, and it doesn't take long at all when one of your primary arteries are being severed. And by the time medical came, the guy's body was gray. And then there was a pool of blood it was just so much blood that you didn't realize that much blood is in a human being. And it took a toll on me. It took a toll on many of us. And initially you don't realize it. You don't realize it, but it just kind of like, wow, that was a human being. Wow, I've never seen a gray body. Wow, it's that much blood. Like, wow, like this person was alive and like now they're dead. And it really, that was one of the toughest things that I saw. That was one of the toughest things that I saw. Second to that, I had a interaction with one of Baltimore's most infamous serial killers, Joe Matheny. In Baltimore, you familiar with him, Stanley?
Yeah, I'm just thinking this was the guy that had something to do with the death penalty. Or yes. Putting him...
Remember, he wrote letters and everything. He went on a murder spree. And yes. I think it was just over like a weekend or what have you. I'm a brand spanking new correctional officer. And we were, when you first come into corrections, you have to search the inmate cells. Like that's one of the, like, you have to learn how to search it. You have to learn how to search it well. Mm-hmm. Ironically enough, I was gifted and or cursed with having to search his cell. Now, I heard all on the news about this person, but never engaged with him. And by the way, he was very polite, I might add, but that's what sociopaths are.
Yeah.
He was a sociopath, so he was very polite, very respectful, very like, this guy killed this many people, like, couldn't have been. But yes. And so and that gets you like that, because you feel like you have human beings understood, but sociopaths, boy, they get you. That was the so when I found out, now when I did find out that this was that person, I can honestly say I felt intimidated and a bit nervous. I was brand spanking new. I probably was there 4 months, and you know, they call it, you know, you still wet behind the ear, and everybody's sniffing you out, because just like Gregory said, the career criminals are trying to figure out a way how to manipulate you in some kind of way.
Yeah.
So, but he smelled the fear on me. He smelled it. And he said to me, he said, you know who I am, don't you? And, you know, I tried to not let on. And I'm just like, I heard about you. I was trying to act. It was a whole facade, though, because I was scared to death. But I know who you are. So, he said, you don't have to worry about anything. I never killed a black woman. Now, that was funny later on, but then still, I'm just like, you're admitting that you killed somebody, you know what I mean? Just happened to not been a black woman, but I was like, <it's> like so that was, saved by the bell, but also, Sabi, at one time I was in charge of the barbershop. And so in the barbershop, a lot of times if the hair clippers and things of that nature, if they needed to be serviced, we did not send them out. We usually had guys that were incarcerated that were barbers, or who claimed to be barbers, or was good enough barbers, word on the street that they was the best. And so usually we had those guys that were servicing clippers, what have you. So I had a guy who, again, very respectful, very, very, you know, did his job all the time. And him and I was in the barbershop. Me and him usually were the only ones in the barbershop. And you know, it just was how it was. Now, outside of the barbershop, if it was not on my shift, oftentimes, officers or other inmates would be like, dang, how you got him working for you? And I'm just like, I've never seen him do anything wrong. And so on B shift, a lot of times, if you're on day shift and guys have a job, their supervisor, they put on this face. But when you're not on the shift and at nighttime, then that's when they're doing their dirty work and you just never know. So lo and behold, you know, everybody was like, you know, don't trust this guy, don't trust this guy. And I'm like, oh, he good. He always respectful. Sabi, I had a dream about this guy. I had a dream, and in the dream told me not to be locked in the room with this inmate. Now, keep in mind, I didn't have a dream. Now, I am a dreamer. I dream about a lot of things. A lot of things come to me in my dream, I must admit. But I never had a dream about a detainee or anything. So I was kind of baffled by it. I'm just like, what? Why am I dreaming about this guy? That night, that guy stabbed another guy's eye out. That same night. But you know what was interesting? That he had told me that he was diagnosed with bipolar and schizophrenic, but like, I never saw that. Like, I never saw him act out. I never saw him act out. And so moving forward, I just never knew what to make of that experience.
Wow.
I never knew what to make of it.
That's so.
Well, Sabi, you asked a good question. You got a lot out of that one.
Yeah, that's a lot of good stories. I mean, for our perspective, to write about to hear about it. So that, I mean, why did you decide to quit your job? Like after 20 years, you said, right?
One thing about working for corrections, you know, it it's draining. Interacting with human beings that are in their lower vibration is draining. I did so many things to try to maintain my own peace, whether it was meditation, nature walks, staying closely to my spiritual practice. Again, just like, you know, we were talking about, so you got, of course, you anticipate that the detainees are going to have a certain, you know, they're detained. But then when you don't know which one of your coworkers is straddling the fence. I can tell you, towards the end of my career, one of my assignments was working in the investigative unit in IU. And so, and this was when Tavon White, I don't know if y'all know what Tavon White back in 2016, he had three correctional officers pregnant. Gang, the BGF, had taken over the jail. There were so many people who were compromised that it was overwhelming. You didn't know who was who. And when we started doing our investigation, the rabbit hole was going so deep that it was going to administration knowing about a lot of things. And when administration allows a lot of things to happen, you don't know if you're going home at the end of the day. You don't know if these people are going to have access. Because I can tell you, our personal information, we had to update our contact information because, you know, your life is committed to that job. That you always got to tell them change of address, change of phone numbers. I was even listening to phone calls. When an inmate calls home, a recording will come on that says, this call is being recorded, XYZ, blah, blah, blah. Well, a lot of times people don't believe that those calls are being recorded or monitored. I happen to be one of the people that will monitor some of those calls. We did it for the court system. We did it for the state's attorneys. And we also did it to find out whether or not correctional officers were being compromised. And so we would go down the employee log and we would put everybody's phone numbers in. And oftentimes I would hear my fellow coworkers speaking to an inmate about bringing stuff in. And every time the call always comes on, this call is being monitored. But people, for some reason, they didn't believe it, but they were. And so when it's so many moving pieces, you don't know who's who. Towards the end of my career, I could say early on in my career, there was just like Gregory said, it was more men correctional officers. It was more people who had a pride in their job. And it was people who really appreciated that type of income for the education that they had. But towards the end, It was so compromised that it was just scary. It had become scary towards the end of my career. Yeah.
Miss Melita James.
Yes.
You know, we have talked for about, I don't know, close to 40 minutes or so.
It's right.
But everything you said was just such a nugget. I mean, we got a lot of good stuff, and now we got to pull out the good stuff. No, we got to pull the great stuff out of the good stuff. So we talk about 40 minutes. We're going to squeeze it down, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 minutes. But we're going to pick out all the best of what you had to say. You said a whole lot. You said a whole lot.
Yes.
And we really appreciate it. You are only, now I've been teaching
Edward,
this course.
Wait a minute. Did everybody ask a question, though? I don't know. Did Edward, I don't remember hearing from Edward Lowe.
Oh, yeah. Edward asked a couple questions. He didn't show you his face at first, but he came back.
Okay.
At first, he wasn't on screen, but he did come back on screen.
Oh, there you go, Edward. Yeah, you did ask.
There you go.
That's a good question. You had me thinking.
Did we get everybody? Is there anybody that did not ask a question?
I think everybody did. Sabi, did you have another question?
Yeah, I have another question. It's like, you know,
you had another question.
It's not a personal, but do you think, because I'm not local. I'm just a student here from Kazakhstan, as you can see. I'm just wondering, do you think that the penetration system is changing people who are or who were in a prison? Like, let's say they got 10 years and they are changing or not?
Changing for the better, you mean?
Yeah, for the better. Or in which way, for example? Maybe no. For the worse. For
and
the
they actually call them correctional institution and ain't no correcting going on. Now, once they're in prison, a lot of guys do have access to education and things of that nature, but they really have to fight to get those things and they have to fight to keep those things. But for the most part, no, it's just a warehouse. It's just a warehouse.
Well, the whole purpose was to rehab people, right? That's what going to prison was all about, supposedly rehabilitation. But do you see more monsters being created sometimes?
It's the yin to the yang. It's just the yin to the yang. Just like in every experience, it's just the yin to the yang. They may have, it's like they'll have things in place that work, but then some reason when things work, it don't stay around. It just don't. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity of working in it was called the acupuncture program, and the inmates were getting acupuncture. And it was supposed to, they would get acupuncture, they would get meditation. It really was a safe haven. And I really appreciated that experience. And it seemed to work. But then somewhere along the line, it started being about paperwork. And once it just started being about the paperwork, it started being left. And they had success rates. And I was so baffled. And I'm thinking maybe it was political changes, you know, when politics change and
yes.
and maybe a governor don't see that this is as effective as another one. And so right. When they get rid of it, you know, those of us are at the bottom of the totem pole saying, wait, it works, but it works. And they're saying, cost too much, mm-hmm. cost too much. But there were things in place that were effective, but again, it's just according to politically how everybody agree whether or not this is effective, if it's costing too much and XYZ. So, mm-hmm. So I can say throughout my career, it was just this, it was the yin to the yang. You know, they said the yin to the, you know, the road paid to hell was paid with good intentions. So sometimes mm-hmm. stuff worked but it seemed like the not having anything for human beings to stimulate their minds, that seemed like the lesser thing that they wanted to, the correcting part was it costs too much.
Mm. Well, I think that's going to put a wrap on this beautiful conversation tonight. It didn't even seem like an interview. It seemed like all of us just had a round table.
It's a conversation. I love it. Yeah. I love it.
You were so down to earth and you were just so gracious in giving us all this information. So we're going to break it on down and we're going to put it on tape. Did Chrissy tell you about our website so you can see some of the stuff that we've done before?
She did. She sent me the link. Please check it out. Okay.
You're going to just see some good stuff. You're going to see how we're going to do your interview. I can't thank you enough, Melita. Thank you so much.
I thank you guys so much for having me. And in the future, you see I'm a talker. So I can share, again, 20 years of experience. I got a lot of stories about that. And it's levels to it. And I try to show the levels because, you know, it's just the human experience. It's complex.
Well, I can tell you, I've been teaching this course now, along with Lucas, who's not with us tonight. Mm-hmm. We've done it for a little over a year now, he and I and Greg, working with the inside story perspective, right? But I can tell you, we've only spoken to one other lady in the past 2 years. I've been doing this for a few years now. So there was this one lady who used to work for NASA, and she swindled NASA and Social Security out of a whole lot of money. And she went to the Fed, she went to a federal prison for that. But she was the one who like garnered contracts, but she didn't really have anybody over her who she had to answer to. So things were going kind of bad for her, and she decided to, you know, swindle some money and got caught. Swindling Uncle Sam and NASA. So she's the only other woman whom we've talked to. Both of y'all are very beautiful. And we've talked to one other correctional officer. He was a young man 2 years ago who happens to be my son-in-law. His name is John Davis. And so you're in rare company with what you did. So alone, your name is going to stand out in your experiences. And we're going to get back on these machines and talk and discuss. And we're going to bring out the best. And when we get it ready, we're going to call you and let you know so you can see it.
I look forward to it. I thank you so much for allowing y'all to share part of my story. And I wish everybody peace and blessings.
Same back to you. Everybody want to say anything right quick? We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Do you want to say a final goodbye or see you later?
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Thank you so much. Bye, Gregory. Bye, Mark. Bye, Edward. Bye, Sammy. Bye, Sid. Y'all have a good evening.
Thank you. We'll get back with you, Melita.
Okay, thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you so much.